Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Welcome back on the show. We've got a lot more coming for you straight ahead. David Dossie is with us. David is not only an outstanding intellectual property attorney, he's my intellectual property attorney. He's with the law firm of Gallagher and Dossie, and he's the guy who helps me protect and defend my intellectual property, which is something that we do around here. We create a lot of it around here, and I bet you do too, but you might not know about it, and that's what David's going to help us with. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you back, and happy Small Business Week.
Yes, same to you.
How about that? You know, that's an interesting thing, the Small Business Week. It's different weeks each year, and it's whenever the SBA decides they want to have it, and that's pretty convenient for them. I just wish that we could establish 1 week as Small Business Week, the official Small Business Week, and we celebrate that week every year. Don't you think we ought to?
Sure, that'd be great.
Well, I just think we need to not be so, wishy-washy about when Small Business Week is, and there ought to be a National Small Business Day, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So I'm gonna keep working on that. All right, David, what's the news on intellectual property?
Well, as I briefly mentioned to you before, one of the big headline cases recently has been surrounding that book, The Da Vinci Code, and the movie that's supposed to come out with Tom Hanks in May.
What's the guy's name? Dan Brown.
Dan Brown is the author.
Yeah.
And the
my wife reads that book.
Really? I did not read it, but
yeah.
I tell you, over 40 million copies were sold. So
made him a lot
of
money, didn't
it? That's right.
But there was some controversy about whether he had violated someone else's copyrights.
Right. There was a book back written in 1982 called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, which actually was a nonfiction historical work or book by two authors that centered around, I guess, Jesus and Mary Magdalene producing a child. And that's a concept that's in Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code.
Right.
So, lo and behold, of course, there's a lawsuit in London for copyright infringement. And there was a great scare on whether that was going to delay this movie that, Tom Hanks is in. It's supposed to come out in May. And so after a three-week-long trial, the judge basically at the end of last week came out and said he thinks very little of the plaintiff's case and dismissed it.
This was in England?
Yes.
The case was in England?
Yes.
And what did you take from all of that?
Well, it just reemphasizes that copyright is not, you cannot copyright ideas. They tried to argue that he took the central theme or the architecture from their book. In other words, this premise about Jesus and Mary Magdalene producing a child. And as in the United States, you cannot copyright ideas.
You can patent an idea, but you can't copyright it.
Well, you patent inventions. So if you have an idea and you essentially transform that into something that you can put down on paper and that someone could look at it and understand that it would work.
Even if you don't create one, even if you don't create a prototype, right?
Exactly. You don't need to create a prototype.
Copywriting is different.
Copywriting is different. It protects, what's the best way? It protects original works of authorship, and that includes, literary works, dramatic works, musicals, novels, poetry, songs, software, that's a big one, architecture, video games, all these things, they have to be put down in a tangible form. It can't just be an idea. And the judge felt that the plaintiff was just trying to push the line a little too far in their case.
Well, so now the movie can go forward, right?
Exactly.
Allegedly. Well, there have been, one of the interesting things about this is there have been, if I'm not mistaken, songs that have been performed And the defendant in the case where a song copyright was being alleged to have been infringed upon, the song there would be a little bitty part of the song, a little piece of the music, a riff in the song, so to speak, that was alleged to have been lifted from a previous song, and they've won that. How's that happen?
Well, there's the laws for sampling or using other people's notes. There are just a lot of old wives' tales concerning what you can get away with. We've had numerous people call, and they say, well, if it's more than five simultaneous chords or consecutive chords.
Right.
And the number of old wives' tales we've heard on that are endless. But the bottom line is you need permission to use other people's works.
Even if it's three chords.
Right.
That's funny. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend David Dossie. He's an intellectual property attorney.
I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice.
Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you take advantage of all the things that are there. They're all free. Everything but the books. We ask you to pay for the books, but everything else, and it's most everything, is free for you to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And David Dossie helps us do that. He's our guest and my intellectual property attorney and someone I encourage you to check out if you need an intellectual property attorney. And if you're a small business owner, believe it or not, you probably do. David, give us your website, please.
It is www.invention-protection.com.
One of the big things, David, that you and I've talked about before is the fact that small business owners don't get the fact that now, I mean, I have a media company. We create lots of content. It's probably easy for people to see that between my writing and the show and all that, the different ways that we distribute our products, it's probably easy for them to see that I would need to know about intellectual property. But they're selling shoes or meat or tires or dresses or whatever. And they're thinking, that's not intellectual property. I have inventory. That's real stuff. That's not intellectual stuff. But they don't realize that they actually have intellectual property. It's a little bit more subtle in those kinds of businesses, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We've just recently had people call because their competitors have copied their exact menu layout, even the names of some of their dishes.
Right.
You know, and coupon, the weekly coupon books that come on Sunday in the newspaper, you know, someone copied their exact advertisement. And, you know, it just adds confusion. And a lot of those businesses would never have thought they had intellectual property until someone else essentially tried to take advantage of it.
If you create it, whether it's an ad or a brochure or a business card the copy of a commercial or whatever it might be, if you create it, maybe it's the system, maybe it's the specific way that you've determined to let your trucks run their routes. That's your intellectual property, isn't it, David?
Absolutely.
And you deserve to own it and to enjoy it and to profit from it and for it not to be infringed upon by others.
Exactly. And we tell clients all the time, especially small businesses, some people get on the bandwagon and they recognize that copyright, federally registering your copyrights, is one thing that anyone can do themselves without an attorney involved. And the protection it affords is just incredible. And so many small clients have developed just bulletproof copyright protection programs.
How do they do that?
Well, they just get one of their administrative people that is going to look at every, let's say, menu or every marketing piece that goes out, every promotional item, and assess whether they should file for copyright protection or federal copyright protection on it or not. And the forms are all available on copyright.gov. It's a great website. It explains things in easy-to-use language. You don't need an attorney, and it's only $30 per registration.
Hmm.
And it, frankly, is one of the best deals that you can get from the government.
Copyright.gov.
Yes.
And so they don't have to go to USPTO, right?
Right. This is separate.
It's simpler?
right? Well, federal copyright registration is through the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So that's separate from the Patent
and
Trademark
Office. That's right. That's right. I guess I was thinking that I knew that, for example, when we publish our books, we do our copyright through the Library of Congress. Okay, well that's good news. And what would you recommend? I mean, the things that I listed off, the items that I listed off, are those examples of things you should protect? I mean, most people are not going to design an ad and then spend $30 to have it registered.
Right, but when it is copied, they'll wish they had, and that's the important thing, is whether you want to be proactive about it or reactionary.
So just being able to prove that I used it first is not protection?
It is. There is, you know, copyright, general common law copyright exists as soon as you create any work, artistic work, and put it in tangible form. There are lots of benefits of going one step beyond that and federally registering your copyright.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary one is what's called statutory damages. So if someone willfully infringes, in other words, looks at your work and runs a copy of it, reproduces it identically, your menu, your advertisement, whatever, statutory damages can be awarded up to $150,000 per infringement, rather than actually having to show that maybe copying those menus only physically cost you $100.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a system set up by Congress that is there to protect the small business and set an example, because copyright can be so hard to enforce that with these statutory damages, there's really such a sting if you do it that there's no reason not to.
I've got a friend who's in the software business. And he was having some pretty good success with his packaging in stores. And a much, much bigger competitor basically they literally did knock off his packaging and put a product out there that was very similar, and it proved to confuse the consumer.
Absolutely.
And they took them to court. And they won.
Good. And the other thing is, very few people understand how long federal copyright actually lasts. You know, right now, people may have heard of the Sonny Bono legislation years ago, but, you know, copyright, the term is the life of the author plus 70 years.
The life of the author plus 70 years.
Exactly. Your grandchildren could be taking advantage of your copyright.
How about great-grandchildren? Yeah.
Exactly.
Stand by. Quick break. Right back with David Dawson. We've got more intellectual property discussion to come right after these messages. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend David Dawson. He is an intellectual property attorney. Formerly, we would call them patent attorneys, but there's so much more to intellectual property than just patents. Although, David, I know you probably do a lot of patents, don't you?
Absolutely. Probably 50 to 75% of our business is patent related.
But is that changing? Is the other 25 or so percent, is it growing?
Oh, without a doubt.
The copywriting,
trademark,
the trademarking, and all that sort of thing. That's a growing part of your business, isn't it?
Yes.
So is that growing? Does that mean that the intellectual property? Would you say that the intellectual property field is growing because of that?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
Because
as you've said so many times, the transition from a business's hard assets, now that majority is in intellectual property.
That's right.
The law's just got to follow where the money is.
You know, David, I have been, as you know, I've been quoting that Kenneth Crozen's research for a number of years now, and for some time now, when I speak to small business groups, I love to talk about that. I love to give them that example, the 80-20 example, 80% fixed assets, 20% intellectual property, you know, 30 years ago. Now those numbers have completely inverted, or at least they've moved in the other directions. And I like asking my audience, these are real small business owners that I'm speaking to, If they see their business doing that, and you'd be amazed at how many people are saying that they are seeing that. It's very heartening to me to hear small business owners say that they understand this this research. They understand that they're leveraging intellectual property more and hard assets less.
Right. And what blows my mind is the number of companies that will have like a facility manager, you know, just to manage the hard assets or the facility,
right,
to make sure the light bulbs are working. But when you think about the intellectual property being worth 4 or 5 times more than that,
right, right,
and no one has, you know, no small businesses have intellectual property managers.
No. And I see, that's the point that I make. I say that, you know, how much money have you spent this year on protecting your inventory?
Right.
How much money have you spent protecting your intellectual property? You know, but one of the things I like to start out doing is holding up a thumb drive in my hand, you know, a little USB drive,
right,
in my hand, and say, okay, there's a truckload of your inventory in the parking lot, or on this thumb drive, there's a unique way to deliver your products and services that customers will love, and you're the only one who has it. Which one would you rather have? You can have one or the other, the truckload of inventory or this thumb drive. They always choose the thumb drive.
And which one's easier to steal?
That's there you go. That's a good point. That's exactly right. The intellectual property is easier to steal, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we've gotten really good at protecting our fixed assets, but protecting our other assets, that's a whole other area. And I'm, you know, I'm on a personal crusade. I know you are too, David, to get small business owners to understand where the real power in their company is, and where the uniqueness is. You know, there's not too many unique products that we can buy to resell, are there?
No.
But the way we deliver it, that can be unique, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, think of the investment people make into figuring out the most effective delivery system for any product, and you've got to protect that.
If a small business owner wanted to have an audit, if they wanted to call you, for example, and say, okay, David, I believe you. I hear what Blasting Game says. I'm sick of hearing him talk about this. I'm going to do something about it. If somebody wanted to do an audit and they said, okay, tell me what I own. Let me tell you what I have. You tell me what I own that needs to be protected. Could your company do something like that, your business? Your practice do something like that?
Absolutely. In fact, there's all sorts of great resources online for trying to conduct your own intellectual property audit. You know,
give us an example.
Basically, it'll lay out, you know, where you need to start. Start looking at trade secrets. And one of the most important things is, what employment agreements do you have in place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, revisit that first. If nothing else, start there with your intellectual property audit, because that's so critical to guarding what you develop.
Give us your website one more time.
It is www.invention-protection.com.
And it's a good one, folks. It's not your grandfather's intellectual property website. Hey, thanks, David, for being here. Good job, as always.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time. David Dossey, ladies and gentlemen, he's not only an intellectual property attorney, he's my intellectual property attorney. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, wishing you a very happy Small Business Week, which we're going to continue to celebrate all week long. And I'll be back on the other side of the news.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.